Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast.
Okay, and how long do I have you for? Because I want to be very respectful of your time.
I was under the impression it was an hour, so if it's an hour, I'm totally fine with that.
Hour works. Hour is like, because hours is like 45 minutes to an hour.
So, okay.
Yeah, great. So that's awesome. All right. So
that's great. And thanks again for having me on. I appreciate
it. Yeah, because this is going to be fun because I love drummers. Great. You have no idea how much I love drummers.
I have a question for you, too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Please let me pull up this note, make sure I have it in front of me also. Here it is. Okay. We have, I don't know if you, I think you know this from when Lincoln or McKenna got a hold of you. We have a membership site. There's a free level and there's a paid level. Is it okay if at some point I talk about that and give your listeners a code that doesn't even have an expiration date where they can get like 3 free months to try it out? Would that be okay?
Actually, we are going to talk about it. Yes, sir.
Oh, so, great. Yeah, so, okay.
Okay. Now to get that correct, it's on drumtalktv.com, correct?
Actually, the membership site is drumtalktvbrilliance.com. Other ones are our main sort of mothership price, other one was built on a totally different platform and they're not linked the way they should be. We should take care of that finally.
Got it. Yeah.
So it's drumtalktvbrilliance.com. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. So let me put that in my notes and we'll get started.
Okay, cool. If you need any info from me or Lincoln, you know, afterward before you publish it, just reach out.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, so let me toss that in here in just a minute. Brilliance. Okay.
Great.
Right.
Get all my sniffles out of the way.
Yeah.
Allergies.
Everybody does allergies, yeah.
Yeah. When the weather changes, it just really messes with me.
I know. It's horrible. Because down here, we have pollen, and that drives everybody here crazy. So.
Yeah. And here we have a lot of dust and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, here we go.
Okay.
Go up here, and then, okay, yeah, so we're going to mention in sometime in the podcast. And when you want to bring it up, you can just bring it up, ask me any kind of questions you want to also, and we're going to have a good time, okay? I do have a short bio about you.
Okay.
And then I'm going to say, hey, Dan, how are you doing? You know, or something along the line, and you can come
great.
In.
Great, and I may ask you, and this happens to everyone I know, okay?
Yes.
I may ask you to repeat yourself because you've heard the story, the dog ate my homework. A dog chewed up my hearing aids.
No way.
Yeah, so I'm waiting for new hearing aids. So my hearing isn't always great.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to try to speak slow and calm.
And I got my speaker up loud and yeah.
Oh yeah, buddy. All right, okay, so here we go.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your professional handicapped host, James Cox, and I have another great interview today. Especially, I love him so much because he's a drummer. You know, I love drummers because my co-host Blake is a drummer, And I can't wait to talk to Dan Schneider. Did I get Schinder?
Schinder, yes.
Schinder. Okay, so don't normally I get the last name wrong. You know,
yeah,
that's cool, yeah. So Dan Schinder is a pioneering social media strategist and a visionary founder of Drone Talk TV, a global lifestyle brand that is captivated by nearly 1.5 million active followers across 130 countries. I know, right? I can't even believe I just said that, you know?
I still can't. Like, when I hear it fed back to me, it's just so weird, but right. Go on.
Okay. Through your innovative content marketing strategy, Dan has built an empire that reaches an astounding 100 million people annually since 2013, and I'm sure you're going to faint from that, too. all without paid advertisements or CEO tactics, which is hard to do.
All organic.
Yes, and we're going to definitely talk to you about that, too. As a lifelong music enthusiast and family man, juggling a blended household of 11 children and 19 grandchildren, which I don't understand, Dan has mastered the art of organic growth and engagement, achieving 10 million and reaching. Well, I'm just going to stop there and talk to you, you know? Because that's, I mean, a million people worldwide, it sounds
what's busy. Wrong with those people? Something must be wrong with those people.
No,
we have a 1-year-old great grandchild now too.
Yes.
We're like fourth generation, which is really bleh, what am I old enough for that? I don't know.
So really you have 11 children, so you can form like 2 or 3 different bands with them, right?
That, or maybe start a flash mob business.
Football field, or some football team or something, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. 40-something people all together between my wife and I, the 11, that's 13, and then we've got the 19 grandkids, so we're up there above 40 people. It's crazy.
Unbelievable, you know? And not to mention, you started this mission through Drum Talk TV, and you have accumulated 1.5 million followers, right, across your whole thing.
Exactly. 1.3 are on Facebook alone, which is a challenge to do. And then we've got some other, you know, we're on Instagram, YouTube, Vimeo, and X. We're getting ready to launch. We've tickled TikTok a little bit, but now we're getting ready to hit it hard. And there's a new platform we're looking at called Flip. And there's some crossover, some overlap with our audience, but yeah, it's about 1.5 million people all together. Wow. And it's crazy.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I just looked on your Facebook page and a few friends of mine are following you as well. We got Ben McKinnon, which we talked about before. He's such a good dude. I love him to death. And we got my co-host Blake Mosley and Tommy Chan, which is the drummer from the band Trench. So
I just wanted to give
them a shout out and
big shout outs. Yeah. Thanks for following us.
Let you know that they follow you too. Yeah. Cause for years and years and years, I've been a guitar man, up until like my 20s or something. And then I started really listening to drums and the way that they have the backbeat laid over the music, you know?
Yeah.
And I find that tremendously depression relief, you know, because whenever I hear those double basses, man, yeah. I just can't get enough, you know.
That's cool.
So with you, were you always like a drum dude, or did you like come to that fruition later on in life?
No, it started when I was 6 and a half. I still have 2 older cousins. One's 7 years older than me, and the other 6 years older than me. So when I was 6 and a half, they were 12 and a half and 13 and a half. And the older one played drums already, and they both listened to the music that was out at the time. So we're talking 1969, okay? And so I got exposed to a lot of what is now classic or vintage or archaeological rock, no pun intended.
Yeah.
You know, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, ELP, early Genesis, Deep Purple, Jethro Tull, the Beatles, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so when I saw my cousin play from time to time, I finally, there was something about it that just grabbed me. And it wasn't just like, oh, I hear, this was a big part of it, I hear drums and now I see what that looks like when I hear it on a record. Like, that was part of it, but there was something about just the whole physicality of it and the mechanics and the hi-hat doing this, and it just intrigued me. So I asked my parents, my crazy parents, and they're crazy because they said yes. I said, I want to play drums. And they asked me over and over, and they first gave me a practice pad probably 3 months before I turned 7. They said, we'll get you lessons if you stick with it. Maybe we'll get you a drum set. And I'm pretty sure it was my 7th birthday. That would be April of 1970, which is crazy. And I haven't grown up that much since then, but I'm a better drummer.
Okay, good.
And they bought me a real drum set. And I just dove in. But at that time, I had no aspirations of being a professional musician. I'll get to that part. But what I did do is I got really pretty good really quickly, I think, because I loved it so much and it gave me an outlet, and I was just turned on to so much music around me. My parents, I grew up, my dad played some guitar, but I wouldn't call him a guitar player. You know, he knew like 8 songs and that was it.
Yeah.
And he started playing when he was 17. And I have his guitar that he got when he was 17, actually, nice. A classical guitar. But my point is, my parents were huge music fans, and I grew up listening to, you know, billowing through the house, Simon and Garfunkel, Neil Diamond, The Fifth Dimension, and, you know, that was probably most of what I remember hearing when I was really young. And then from my cousins and a lot of other cousins, I heard a lot of the rock music. My parents were the younger ones of their families, so my sister and I were the younger ones of all the cousins. So I was exposed to all this early. But back then, and I grew up in Los Angeles, music distribution was different on the airwaves. And what I mean by that, James, is that music wasn't as segregated by genre as it is now. So I'd be able to sit at my drums, I'd have a stereo about 5 feet away with headphones. I'd put on what the hip LA station was at the time, 95KHJ. 95KHJ. I even remember that. And I'd play to whatever came on. And thankfully, what is the same from back then, what was established back then, is the rotation. So if I played long enough, I heard the same songs over and over. But what was different then from now is that I'd play to like Sly and the Family Stone, and then Neil Diamond would come on, and then Pink Floyd would come on, and then Bobby Sherman would come on, then Simon and Garfunkel, and then Jeff. It was just a mixed bag of all this stuff that sort of at the time they kind of put in one category, even though there was some soul and funk mixed with psychedelia, mixed with pop. And I didn't know at the time, 7, 8 years old, when I was going through this process, that I was really learning different styles. Three Dog Night, Ohio Players. You know, I just mentioned a bunch of bands that are so different from each other. And it wasn't until I got older, like early teens, I realized as music distribution on the radio changed, what a blessing that was. Rather than, it was like having someone take out this mishmash box of records and say, okay, play to this. Okay, now play to this. It's totally different. Okay, play to purple, play to green, play to magenta, play to red. And I think, and I did take lessons for a while when I was a kid, but I'm for the most part self-taught. Okay. And I'm blessed with a really good ear. I don't mean my hearing is great. My hearing's not great. For those listening and watching, I told James I might ask him to repeat himself a lot because the dog chewed up my hearing aids. Seriously. I've got 24% loss and 12% loss. But I have a good ear for understanding what I'm hearing and memorizing music. I've never learned music from reading a chart. And I can play anything in the Yes catalog, Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Genesis. I just know that music inside and out. ELP. So I dove into a lot of complex music by bands who had a lot of epics that were 20 to 40 minutes long. And that served me very well to do that very young. But what changed from not having being a professional musician on the radar to it being the only thing I ever wanted to do is in 1977. Tell me if I'm talking too much, by the way.
No. Okay. It's fine. totally fine.
You're Remember, I interview people for a living, so I don't get to talk much. But my dad in 1977 took me to see Led Zeppelin. And I wanted to be at the time, I wanted to be growing up all those years until I was at that point, 14. I wanted to be the next Jacques Cousteau. I wanted to be an oceanographer. And when I saw Led Zeppelin, by the third song, I thought, oh, you mean that could be a job? That could be a career? So 2 days later, when my hearing came back, I sat my parents down and I said, and my first initials are DR, because my mom was sure that her Jewish son would grow up to be some sort of doctor, right? So I sat them down. I said, I don't want to be a scientist anymore. I don't want to be an oceanographer. And my mom very enthusiastically said, oh, what do you want to be? I said, I think I want to be a professional drummer like John Bonham. And she fell over. We had to hit her with the paddles and wave the smelling salts. We brought her back to life.
Right.
And, you know, she was disappointed and moped around for a little bit. But to their credit, and especially my mom, because exactly 1 year later, early summer of 1978, she found an audition for a singing group that had a backup band that was going to go on tour. Now, I'm 15 years old. And she says, do you want to do this? And I said, yeah. And she took me to this audition, and the drummer was going to be leaving. And for those of you listening, watching from LA, the drummer was Al Lohman Jr. And Al Lohman Sr. was a big radio personality that had a show syndicated for years and years called Lohman and Barkley. So I'm like, oh, wow, I might replace that guy. I'm watching them rehearse. But I'm sitting next to my mom in this theater watching them rehearse. No one else in the seats, just my mom and I, watching them on the stage rehearse the show. And they're playing stuff like Linda Ronstadt, ABBA, Neil Diamond, even though I grew up with that. But I leaned over to my mom. Now, remember the music I mentioned that I was listening to and playing? Right. I leaned over to my mom and I whispered, I said, Mom, I don't really want to play this kind of music. She snapped around in her seat and grabbed me by the shirt and shook me with every syllable and said, who cares what kind of music it is? You said you wanted to be a professor. They're going to pay you to see the country. Your father and I could never send you on. And the light bulb went on above my head. And I thought, back to those days when I listened, played to all the different kinds. I said, yeah, what difference does it make what kind of music? And I got, at 15 years old, paid to play and see the country from L.A. to Long Island and back a different way, opening for bands like Heart, Blue Oyster Cult, Seals and Crofts, Pat Boone, The Osmonds, and meeting some of that. At 15 years old, my parents must have been crazy. I mean, our oldest is going to be 50 now, and we worry about him. What were my parents on? I mean, so that's how it all started, as far as from going from answering the question, was I always a drum dude, and how that started, and then wanting to be a professional musician. And then slowly, I did start to teach myself other instruments. In fact, when I saw Led Zeppelin, and I was very familiar with their catalog and played all their stuff, but when I saw them, I told my parents, I also told them this. I said, I want two things, and I'll do anything for them. And before they even asked what they were like, anything? And I thought, uh-oh, they already have something planned.
Right.
And I got, I'll show it to you in a moment. I said, I want an 8-string mandolin, like Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones each have.
Yeah.
And I asked for the craziest thing. I said, I want a pair of timpani drums, because I was already playing timpani in concert band at school, and John Bonham had timpani drums right here with a drum set.
Yep.
So here's the mandolin right there in the middle.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then the other one to the left is my dad's Giannini guitar from Brazil.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. When he was 17 years old. And then one day that same year, I'm at home after school, and a black van is backing up into our driveway. I see it out the window, and I call my mom and dad. I said, hey, there's someone backing up into the driveway. And like, oh, go out and see what it is. And I'm thinking, that's kind of weird. Like, what if it's some guy that kidnaps kids with a van? Yeah. But I'm like, okay. So I go out, and I didn't know they followed me. I go out, and the van says, music stop, Mel Zelnick's music stop. I'm like, what's this all about? So old guy, I'm probably older than he was then, right? Okay.
Right.
He gets out with a girl who was like, I think 14. No, a couple years younger than me, because I was 14 and she was 12. So she gets out and he says, hi, I'm Mel. This is my granddaughter, whatever her name was. I don't remember. Yeah. And he opens up the side doors to the van and there's a pair of timpani drums. Like, what the F word? Yeah. Right, yeah. And I look at my parents and I said, what is this? And Mel said, these were mine. I bought them in 1958 and I used them playing with Artie Shaw. And he names all these amazing musicians. And my parents bought them for $700. And I still, I've never gotten rid of anything, James.
No, set up
with my big obnoxious Prague kit in my studio, along with a four-piece jazz kit, and I got a couple other sets that I just keep packed up to run with. But it was just that's how supportive my parents were, and it taught me a lot about parenting. It taught me a lot about relationships. It taught me a lot about not dictating to someone what I think they should do. I mean, of course, I've always given my kids advice and all that, but I mean, not saying you got to be a doctor, or you got to be this, you got to. Nope. My parents,
you got to let them be what you want to be, or else they won't.
And support that, because if you water a plant that blooms a flower, it will blossom. Yeah. And it was just the most amazing. My parents were not rich, but like my wife says, she says, you were so lucky. You had the most amazing upbringing, and I had the most amazing parents. I really did. So that was a huge part of how my first really 7 years, 8 years, if we count the Led Zeppelin thing, turning 15, going on tour, how the first 8 years of me being in music went. I went from just learning on a practice pad to going on a national tour in an 8 year span.
Opening for a big band too, right?
Yeah. It's not like I was 15 when I started and did it at 23. I think that's still a great story, but I was just barely seven. And at 15, and then they asked me back the following year, and it was in between school sessions. You know, I was in, just finished back in the old days, junior high ended at ninth grade. So I went on tour between ninth and 10th grade, then started high school. And then they asked me back between 10 and 11, I did the same thing. And then I taught myself some mandolin, a bit of guitar, bass. I play piano, keyboards, and mess around with that. And pretty much almost any percussion instrument, almost. The two I have not played, I mean, I can hit them, but I don't know the technique, is the tabla and the meridian gum, two of the hardest percussion instruments to play. But I play a lot of like, they're from India and Morocco, respectively. Oh, okay. But I play like Latin percussion. There's a micro conga. I got a real set. There's all kinds of West African drums, djembes. Right here I have, one's my wife's, one's mine. I have darbukas from North Africa, Middle East, and back there's another djembe.
It's funny that you have some African drums, because my sister went to Togo, Africa.
Oh, really?
She was in the Peace Corps, and she brought me back one of those that you got right there. And And I think she said that the drum head is made out of goat skin or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. She brought one back for her and for me. And so, it's not my
parents. That's great.
Yeah, but that's awesome.
I love hand percussion. I love listening to music from different cultures. We did two documentaries in Japan on taiko drumming. We're looking at going to Brazil and Uganda for two separate documentaries, hopefully in the next 12 to 18 months. We're in the planning stage now. So it's, you know, music is everywhere, and it's great to explore and just see what resonates with you. I listen to a lot of Arabic music. I don't know how many Jewish people listen to Arabic music, but I do. And I love music from Egypt and Israel, Oman. You know, that whole region is just so enchanting musically and mythically as well, and the real history. Right. So it's important to, you know, open your mind to different things. And I tell other musicians, James, I tell them, listen to music you can't stand. What? I tell them, if you don't like heavy metal,
that's my brief response. It's like, hell you mean to live?
Right. You know? Yeah. I say, if you don't like heavy metal and you're a drummer or guitar player or whatever, once in a while, listen to a Judas Priest piece, listen to an Iron Maiden piece. If you don't like funk, listen to a little funk, because you'll listen to something, A, that's outside of your regular everyday palette, the hamster wheel of music that you're on. Right. And two things will happen if you really are open to it and pay attention. One is you'll pick up some new tools for your toolbox that you can apply to what you do. And by the same token, you'll recognize where the whatever music you listen to, where that might have come from or who borrowed from what. You know, like the guys who are my heroes, rock wasn't around. They were all jazz drummers or Latin drummers, and they invented rock. So when you learn where who you look up to, their influences came from, you start to understand and study the lineage of music. Like rock came from blues, and blues came from jazz, and jazz came from West African rhythms. And, you know, we can go on and on. And I think it's important to know that and really understand what you're listening to. It's like literature the same way. You know, it's kind of the same thing.
Right. Yeah, it's like it progresses over time. It makes it better, you know, for everybody to enjoy. Let's go back to when you said you didn't want to play the songs like that band was playing. You
know? That's embarrassing, but it's part of the true story.
No, but that's funny because you mentioned that because I got a story to tell you.
And now I'm saying listen to music that you don't like.
Exactly. Like, well, stuff changes, right? But I think I heard this story from somewhere. So I'm not sure if you're a fan of the band Alabama, you know.
I'm familiar with them, and I've actually seen them once before too.
They are so great. They're my all-time favorite band. But their drummer was playing some other genre except for country, you know.
Yeah.
And Randy, the lead singer, wanted them to play, and he asked him, "Do you like playing country?" And the drummer was like, "Man, I'll play anything just to play it." He just wanted to play. He didn't care what genre, you know.
And just to play.
And look at the band now, they're like number one in all country charts and my favorite band ever. And I, you know, so
that's awesome.
So I guess your mom really took you and said, "You got to try this, you know, and if it doesn't make you happy, come back home," right? Yeah. Because I love when parents support their children, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah. Another thing that you brought up, you talking about Led Zeppelin a lot, you know. So I know that this is going to be a strong debate, but I think you can finalize it for us, you know. I always ask my drummer guests, which drummer is better, okay? You got Bonham, Led Zeppelin, and you got Pert from Rush. Which one do you think, yeah?
Two extremely huge influences of mine. Yes. Bonham since I was six. And Neil, I discovered in 1976 when a friend brought over 2112. And my answer might surprise you, depending on what all the answers are that you've gotten before when you ask that question.
There's only one answer I got.
Yeah. My answer is that when it comes to music or songs or a specific musician, I don't think there's such thing as better. I think the question is, who do you like better, or who do you think is better at something? That has to be very specific. Otherwise, it's truly subjective. It's like if someone says, "Well, pizza sucks." Well, pizza doesn't suck. You just don't like pizza, and that's
right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will. So, having said that, I will say this: John was one of the deepest groovers ever. Such a deep groove, and did stuff like, if you really listened carefully to Out on the Tiles, and I mean just these two songs, Out on the Tiles and the Wanton Song. Out on the Tiles from the third album and the Wanton Song from Physical Graffiti, the groove of those is so, it's dripping with groove, for goodness sakes. Neil was a much more technical style drummer. That's, of course, was also in a band that played as they matured. You know, if you look at from the first album Neil played on, from Fly By Night to Farewell to Kings to Clockwork Angels, they went through all sorts of morphing and stepping, and they got more and more progressive and technical and all that. And Neil was more of a, I think it's fair to say, technical drummer. And there's a lot of people who say Neil didn't have any groove. Folks, I'm not saying that. Don't kill the messenger. I'm not saying he did, right. though, either. I'm not going to comment. But you play, if you play, let me think for a moment. Let's say YYZ next to Kashmir. They're two different worlds.
God, yeah.
And both of those drummers played music their own that were different worlds. And I'll give you an example of that, if I may. If you listen to Achilles' Last Stand off of Presence, and then you listen to Down by the Seaside off of Physical Graffiti, they're two different, completely different worlds. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Neil Peart. If you listen to, what's that song called? It's the second one on Permanent Waves. I was thinking the song through. You take something simple, and there are some simple things that Rush played and Neil played. And good, you're looking it up. I just can't think of the name of it. But you take that versus like YYZ or La Villa Strangiato or Hemispheres. There are two different worlds, but it's the same three guys. And it's okay that bands can morph and have different ranges of soundscapes even on the same album. I don't have a problem with that. I want to hear more of what someone can do. What's the name of that song?
I'm trying to look it up.
Yeah, second one on Permanent Waves, right after Spirit of the Radio. I can hear it in my head.
Hold on just a minute.
Dun, bum, 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 dun, 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 just between us two. I think it's time for us to realize.
Free Will.
Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, Free Will. Okay,
oh, not Free Will. The soft one. So it must be right after Free Will.
Jacob's Ladder?
What's that?
Jacob's Ladder?
No, it's not. I must have the song order wrong.
Okay. Okay, so we got the Spirit of Radio, Free Will, Jacob's Ladder.
Entree Nou. That's it. Entree Nou. Thank you. French title. Entree Nou.
Entree Nou.
Okay. So you take that and YYZ, even on the same album, and they're on different planets. Or no, YYZ was on Moving Pictures.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. But I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There are drummers that are great at specific things they are maybe greater at in some ways. You know, look at Steve Smith and what he's done. He did with Journey, but then look what he does with his jazz band, Vital Information. Yeah. Look what Steve Gadd has done with all the endless session work from Steely Dan to, it just goes on and on and on. Then you take
I mean, you could say the same thing with Hendrix and Steve Vai. I mean,
Mitch Mitchell?
Steve Ray Vaughan.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
But
totally.
So that's
kind of my position on that. You know, people say Jimmy Page played sloppy. Okay, but look what he did. I'm fine with that. I think he'd be too. I think if I was on heroin and tried to play guitar, I might play sloppy. Okay, I'm just saying. I don't know. But look what they did. And there's I have a collection of Led Zeppelin bootlegs, and there are all kinds of songs where there's a weird chord that I don't know what it is, or there's one note completely out of tune, or there's some slide, but it was part of their whole ethos that created their sound. But you got John Bonham, and you got John Paul Jones holding it down, and then that golden voice up at the front. Everyone has their thing, if you will, you know? And I don't think anybody sucks at anything. It's more a matter of, do we like it? Does it resonate with us? You know, Lars with Metallica catches so much crap, and I don't know why. I don't understand why.
I think the fans were just complaining because of what happened with Napster. You know, all those years ago.
I think that's part of it.
It's
like,
come on, dude. You know, the band then Siegel. It's their lawyers that did. You know, give the band a break.
Look what they've accomplished, and
I know.
Through all their adversity, you know, that they faced death and losing a bandmate, and there's so many different things. And you know, so who criticizing them has that many gold or platinum albums? That's what I want to know.
Right.
Like, if you can't measure up, so what? That's your opinion. Why do you need to throw it all over the place? I just don't get it. Exactly. I just don't get it. Yeah. I have no problem saying, you know what? I don't think the guy liked that much. But I'll never say that sucks just because I don't like it.
Well, you can say I don't like something, but you can never say that it sucks because, right. I mean, like you said before, country, like rock music came after country. and country came after blues.
Yeah, how the different. So yeah, exactly.
If you hate one genre, you might as well hate music in general. You know.
Right. Exactly.
So that's awesome. Yeah.
It's totally okay not to like something. I just don't think people need to spread hate about it or say it sucks. There's just no reason for that. People like that have bad negative energy, and nothing great is going to happen for them. Exactly. That's just my opinion. Yeah.
Okay, so let's dive deep into drum gear, because I'm sure a lot of my listeners are wondering this too, and you have a drum talk TV, so you know all about drums, you know? So if I was a beginning student learning drums, right, what should I look for when I'm going for my first drum as opposed to drum set like you got now, like a big time, you know?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I've never been asked that, James. So the first thing is, there will always be something that will work for you no matter what your budget is. If you just need to find a $50 drum kit at a garage sale, that can work for you. I think people, the brands are going to hate me for saying this, but I think people are so hung up on brands. Okay, and we'll get back to quality and what you're asking, but I want to mention, because this is part of the equation to me. People get so hung up on brands, but when it comes down to it, two things. One, everyone typically loves who their heroes play. You know, Jimi Hendrix, you mentioned, you know, he played a Strat, so for some people, that's their guitar. For some people, the drums are Ludwig because John Bonham played Ludwig. Carl Palmer played Ludwig, you know, on and on. But here's the thing. There is not a single pair of ears on the planet that if you blindfolded them, not even the wood whisperer, John Good of DW.
Right.
If you blindfolded him or anyone else and you set up 5 4-piece kits with the same size drums, the same thickness of shells, the same drum heads, had the same drummer play on each set, not one person on the planet could tell you, okay, number one is Gretsch, number two, oh, that's Tama, number three, oh, that's definitely Slingerland. No one can do that. Right. So it comes down to first get something you can afford. Okay. Learn how to tune drums and learn the difference of the type of sound different types of heads get, coated versus clear versus double ply versus, you know, all those different things. Find a sound that you like from a drummer you admire. And if you aspire to get their sound, learn tuning and learn the science and sonics of drums. When drums are cold, the shells are harder, no matter what they're made out of, whether it's aluminum, steel, wood, acrylic. When they're cold, they're harder. When the surface is harder, they're going to be louder. And then there's bottom heads or not. So I'd say start out small with a 4-to-5-piece kit. I did. I had a 4-to-5-piece kit. Then that was in 1970. And then in 1976, I got 2 Slingerland concert toms. So now I had a 7-piece kit. And then the timpanis showed up a year later.
Right. Yeah.
And then in 1979, my parents bought me a 5-piece Tama kit. And I morphed all that together. I've never had a double bass kit. My dad made a stand for the bass drum to be this big like gong drum.
Yeah.
And then he made another attachment for that would hold the 2 toms that were on that bass drum on my first kit. So now I had bam bam. And I've never looked back. I still have that big blue kit is that kit. So start out small, listen to all kinds of music. I do recommend, even though I'm mostly self-taught, I took lessons for the first maybe 3 years, and I learned what rudiments are. I learned sticking. I learned how to hold the sticks, you know, 3 different ways. Do I have drumsticks here? Oh, here we go.
Because I know jazz drum.
Pencil, there's a lot of traditional, but there's 2 kinds of match grip. There's German, and there's French. And a lot of times I'm right-handed, so my left hand is playing the snare. My left hand is often playing German with my right hand playing French like this on the cymbals and on the hi-hat. So learn the basics, listen to a lot of different stuff, find a sound that you like and listen, really listen and listen to the, learn the song, learn every instrument in your head that is in the song, because that's your roadmap. If you know when the organ solo is coming in roundabout, you know what the drums are going to switch to right there.
Right.
If you know the guitar, so if you know the words, you'll know when it's going into the chorus, when the bridge is coming. And that's how I learned the structures of songs, was really like I can, you know, thousands of songs that I learned to play on the drums by ear, I can hum, whistle, or sing every other instrument in on that song, whether it's the bass, the keyboards, guitar. And I think that's important. It really helped me. It really helped me. But I would start out simple and just get a 4 or 5 piece kit. You can always add to it. You can always get a better kit. Yeah. Get something to bang on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Release the anger, right? Yeah.
And learn the coordination of, I'll never forget my first drum teacher standing behind me, 7 years old. I'm on a 4-piece kit. And he said, now, Danny, I was Danny back then.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He said, just count quarter notes with your bass drum. Bum, 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 bum. Now hit 2 and 4 with your snare drum. And he was holding my hand behind me. Cha, boom, cha, boom, pa, boom. Now we're going to do 8th notes on the right cymbal. He's holding my hand going. And then I felt him let go and step back. It was like my dad pushing me on the bike when we took the training wheel.
Yes.
And all this stuff. I'm playing a
jumpy.
I'll never forget that. And the magic I felt when I equated to what I heard, what I saw myself doing, what I felt myself doing was something I've heard on the radio, on a record, and I was doing it. And that gave me the belief that I could do anything on the drums. And I can't do anything, but I can play to every Rush, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Jethro Tull, Genesis.
Yes,
all those things I learned and I can play really well. And it's because I suspended my disbelief. I never said, oh, I'll never be that good. And I'm not saying I'm Neil Peart or John Bonham, but I can play. Oh, here's the other thing. Don't just learn the math of the song. Don't just put the beat, you know, the hits where they go. Understand the way the drum is being hit. You know, not everything John Bonham did was bashing. I hate when people say that. There's so much subtlety to his playing in so many songs. Learn the language, the dialect of the language of that drummer. Because if you look at Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin, they're in the same category, but they're totally different, right?
Right.
And Ian Paice, his jazz influence is all over the place. Whereas you rarely hear that from John Bonham, but they have the same influences. So those are the things you really got to listen for and understand. It's not just a matter of putting the notes where they go. It's learn all the different sounds you can get out of one single cymbal.
Right.
Learn the anatomy of the cymbal, the anatomy of your drum head. If you hit it here, it sounds totally different than if you hit it there. Yeah. And again, tuning.
Tuning is a big deal, right? Yeah.
Yeah, real big deal. I learned by ear. There are devices that can help people. And I tuned by ear up until, let me think. Let's say 10 years ago. So I've been playing 55 years. So I played 45 years. And then I interviewed the guy who invented the drum dial. And I learned how it worked. And I used it. But what I found was that, okay, the dial is showing me that I tuned my drums exactly the way science says you should tune. You not should, could tune your drums to thirds. And I stopped using it because I realized I was already doing it. Because I understand the science of head tension and tone. And so that's my take on all of that. Start easy. It's just like being an athlete. You can't start powerlifting right away. You can't start.
No, you got to start at the bottom.
You got to start slow. And same thing. Yeah. I hope that answered the question. Did I miss anything?
Beautifully. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I see people at home listening and watching putting on their airplane neck rest or something.
Right, yeah, they're like, oh, man, this is great stuff. Give me more.
This guy won't shut up.
Right, which, no, I know. But you're talking about this, you know, because it seems and looks like you're so passionate about
it. It's fun to geek out on, too. Right, you know, it really is.
But let me ask you this, because I've been wondering this since the dawn of time, the dawn that I started listening to music, okay? So we do have crosshead play, where right. you're, for people listening, it's left over right or right over left, right? And then right. you have open play, which is the left on the left side, the right on the right side. Okay, that's fair. So technically, the open head would be better, correct? Or does... Because I see a lot of musicians... Not playing the open hand. The only band that I ever saw open hand is Paul from Cannibal Corpse. Yeah. Every other drum on earth is cross hand, and I'm wondering why. You know,
it's a great question.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
But, yeah, that's good.
But to me, that would be a little bit confusing because you got a cross hand, and then when you want to come out and go into a role, you have to cross hand and then go into a role. You know,
I think first there's some great arguments for open-handed playing, and I don't play open hand, but I worked a lot with Billy Cobham, who's open. I worked a lot with the late great Dom Famularo, who's open. Simon Phillips is open. There's so many drummers, and you mentioned, you know, it's I think what you're A, what you're exposed to, and B, what you decide to do. And I think if you work at it, no matter what your thing is, you can make it work for you. So I'm right-handed. So my left hand plays the snare and I play crossed over on the hi-hat.
Right.
But I'm extremely ambidextrous. And that's in my favor because I can do all kinds of fills and I can hit my crashes and splashes and toms with my left hand over there. Or, you know, I don't have a problem like having to get back real quick, because I can compensate for that by being ambidextrous. So I don't think there's a right or wrong way, but I do think it's okay. No, who am I to say it's okay? Right. I think it's important to explore and see what possibilities. And for some people, like if I remember correctly, Ray Luzier told me he's a left-handed drummer playing open-handed on a right-handed kit. What? Like, let me run that by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's true. And it's just different for everybody, depending on their music, depending on their setup, depending on their coordination. And some people learned open-handed that never learned another way. Someone pointed something out interesting in the regard to that question to me once. When I asked someone about open-handed, they say, well, you learn to play a piano a certain way. No matter whether you're right-handed or left-handed, left hand takes care of the lower register, right hand takes care of the higher, right? So we typically learn to play drums, you know, like this, but you'd never think to play piano like that.
Right.
Right. So it's an interesting proposition. And I don't have personally the mental capacity or bandwidth to change that. It's just after 55 years, I'm not interested in learning a new way of doing it. But I do encourage others to explore. And I've tried some stuff, and there's some stuff I can do. It just doesn't feel right to me. You know, if I want to lay into a beat and like the Wanton song, the hi-hat's over here, I'm going to lay into it. You know, that's the motion of it. It's not like I can't get my head around doing it any other way. Good question.
So do you think the reason why I see more cross-handed drummers is the drummers that I see doing cross-handed as opposed to open hand, is they are watching their heroes play, and they want to.
And that's how most teachers teach.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, since the dawn of the trap kit, which became the drum set, which now people call a drum kit,
right?
It's always been like that. Something that's come back in the last 15 years. And someone will correct me on this for sure, because people love to do that, and that's okay. But within the last couple decades, I think what has come back is if you watch jazz drummers like Louis Belson, Papa Joe Jones, you look back to the 50s, even the 40s, even Viola Smith in 1939. If you set up like a traditional right-handed kit, a lot of those drummers had a floor tom on this side, mm-hmm. where John Bonham and I have our timpani drums.
Yeah.
So that's kind of come back. Yeah, or a gong drum on that side. You know, that's what's different about the drums, James, is that you could pick up 15 right-handed guitars, they're going to be set up exactly the same. The intonation might be different, but everyone knows where the fretboard is, how the fretboard's orientated, where the neck is, where the bridge is, where the whammy bar is. If it has one, the machine heads typically the same. The saxophone, the valves are always going to be in the same place. Yeah. Flute, same thing. Piano, they're not. You won't find a piano where it's scrambled, you know, octaves. The drum set is the one instrument that there's no one way to set it up. And even if I play my four-piece jazz kit, but maybe I come over to your house and you have a four-piece jazz kit, there's no way it's going to be set up exactly the same.
Right, yeah.
Whether it's the heights or the tilts or where the cymbals are, and are they flat or are they tilted, even if we had the exact same gear. Right, that's what's interesting to me about drums. And on that note, I do suggest to drummers, mix your stuff up once in a while. Take your small tom over there and put it next to your floor tom. Or some people are rearranging going from higher to lower, and they're reversing these two toms in front of them. To me, that's still a weird one, but it's fun to explore. And sometimes I'll do something with my cymbals that's different. It just makes you think differently because you're used to this matrix, if you will, of targets to hit. And you change the position placement of any one of those, all of a sudden you have to think differently if you're going to play the same stuff that you were playing on that setup, if you will. I hope that makes sense.
Oh yeah, total sense. Yes, sir.
So the crossover thing, you know, that's just how it's been taught for so long because that's how it started. Right. I don't know who the first open-handed player was. That's interesting.
I'll look that up after we get off here, and I can send you who it is. You know, because I'm very interested in it too. You know, because I've seen a lot of cross-hands, not too much open-hand, which is, you know, kind of cool and confusing with me. You know, so. I do want to talk to you about the website Drum Kit TV, but first I got to ask you this, and I've asked somebody else this before, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. Okay.
Okay.
So I am on the front page of Drum Talk TV for those who are looking at the YouTube channel, and right here is a drum kit with all of these symbols on all of these drum heads.
Yeah.
Why? Just why? You know. And I asked somebody, you know, and they said, it's just for show.
No.
But I just wanted to ask you, you know, what's the purpose behind all these symbols and, you know, drum kit?
It's the exact same answer as to why are there 88 keys on an 88-key piano.
Okay.
Why? It's for those different notes and those different sounds. Why are there 18 violins, 6 cellos, 4 violas, and 6 trumpets, 2 French horns in an orchestra? In that orchestra, it's for that sound. And it's really for different tones, textures. And people play, like people who say, this is so stupid. When someone sees a drum kit like that and they say, oh, someone doesn't know how to play a 4-piece. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. That's like looking at an 18-wheel tractor-trailer driver and saying, oh, someone doesn't know how to ride a bicycle. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't even mean anything.
I personally think it's awesome looking, you know, because I was seeing Megadeth play, right? And he's got a rack of cymbals on top of his kit. You know, he's got like 14 drum heads. I'm like, this guy's awesome. You know, he can do whatever he wants to. You know, and that's amazing. You know, I think personally.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a handful of people out there that do certain things for show, but someone like Simon Phillips. You know, I can name Carl Palmer. I can name 20 drummers off the top of my head that have big kits, and they always used every bit of it. Not every song. And just like an 88 key piano, it doesn't mean you're using all 88 keys in a given piece of music. As to me, it's when people say that it's unnecessary, that's ignorant.
That's
total ignorance. And the whole term playing for the song is BS as well. And what I mean by that is some people, they use it to say, oh, the drummer should just play in the pocket and be simple. That is true for certain songs. But for La Villa Strangiato by Rush, for Carnival 9 by Emerson, Lake & Palmer, for Achilles' Last Stand by Led Zeppelin, what they played services that song.
Right, yeah. It's stupid, yeah. It's like, well, and I'm sure you've seen the 7-string guitar, the 18-string bass, and I'm like,
yeah,
those notes were needed sometimes, you know. So
yeah, it's just for different sounds. Yeah.
So let's talk about Drum Talk TV, which before I said you accumulated nearly 1.5 million and above now. But if you go on it with like everybody, you can find experiences, ideas, advice, interviews also, you know, you do interviews. Yeah. And so, but I am curious on how you manage to get so many followers in 130 countries off of no paid advertisement or SEO, you know.
That's easy. I'm super smart.
Oh,
no, that's not.
Yes. I'm talking genius here. Yeah.
You know, when I started Drum Talk TV, I was fairly new to social media.
Okay.
And I used 3 or 4 things to make it work from the very beginning. In our first 7 weeks on Facebook, we had 47,000 fans. And I have a screenshot of our 7th week, which was the second week in February of 2013. We had 47,000 fans. And that week, that 1 week, we were reaching 999,000 people without spending money or anything like that. And it's because I looked at what other people were doing and I said, I don't see how that would help them or work. So I used some logic. Mm-hmm. I used some uncommon sense to go with the logic. Then I tested stuff. I saw what worked and I just supercharged what worked. If something didn't work as well, I'd either polish it and supercharge it, or if it still didn't work, mm-hmm. I stopped doing it.
Right.
And I since have figured out 12 and a half years later, basically, how to get around every algorithm organically, and not just on Facebook either. I'm going to take a quick sip of something.
I forgot to add
something here.
That's fine. Yeah.
So in that first year, I think it was month 8, James, our chief digital officer, Lori, she came to me, and we were using a program called Simply Measured. They're still around, and it measures your statistics and analytics and compares it with whoever you feed into it that's in your space, like competitors. Okay. And so Lori got a subscription to that, and for a few months she put in like Drum Channel, Modern Drummer, Drum Magazine, all these other media companies in our space. We were the newest one by 10 years. Mm. The newest one before us was already out for 10 years, and that was Jonathan Mover's Drumhead magazine. So she comes to me month 8 and she says, it says here from Simply Measured that we're achieving 900% more online reach and engagement than everyone else in our space combined.
Holy I said, crap. Yeah.
Run that by me again.
Right.
And she said it and I said, let me see that. I'm looking at it. And the first thing I thought of was, I want to start a marketing training company to teach people with workshops and courses how to do what I did. This is in the first year. I never at that point aspired to have 1 million fans, reach 100 million people a year, even though we were doing it right then, the 100 million people part. So I started a separate company, which I still have. It's called Advanced Social Marketing, and that's the website, advancedsocialmarketing.com. And I do workshops and I teach courses on how to grow your following and drive traffic for sales. I do it with nonprofits, solopreneurs. I worked with companies like Ford Motor Company, McDonald's, the Sydney to Hobart Yacht Race. I've worked with some legacy brands. It works. What I've done with Drum Talk TV can work the same way with any brand in any industry, basically. I have a client right now They've only done three sessions with me so far. It's not even a B2C product. It's B2B. They're a waste management, environmental management company that deals with making sure people are in compliance and safe with toxic waste and the disposal of things like transducers and motherboards, all of that. They're taking my marketing course. And yesterday, they shot me an email and said, wow, this is really working. We're achieving 2,000 more percent reach and engagement. I'm like, wow, that's great. Today I talked to the owner, and today it was up to 6,000% more online reach than before they started working with me. And they've only done three sessions. The fourth one's tomorrow.
Three sessions.
Yeah, just from what they learned in three sessions. And I'm really proud of that. And I'm happy to share that info. I do free workshops once a month. And then I have a paid online course that is self-guided. And then I also do, when I say one-on-one, I mean, it could be one on however many are in the marketing team, you know, that kind of thing. And then I do that sort of coaching consulting, and I do a custom designed course depending on where they are with their needs, what they want to achieve, what space are they in, you know, all of that. And then I take my big course and I customize it for them, and then I guide them through it. There's exercises, there's homework, there's all kinds of worksheets and things that help guide people through it if they take the self-guided one. And then I customize that for one-on-one clients. And it's a lot of fun. It's not like I have a lot of extra time, but I really get a lot out of teaching and sharing that information and seeing people thrive doing what they love to do the way I have. It's, you know, I grew this giant company out of, my wife is a huge part of the idea, actually.
I gotta give
Angie that shout out. But we took an idea, literally some couch change. I did not have money at the time, and some belly button lint. And I had more belly button lint than couch change. And I poured myself into it. And she's been supportive for 12 years and 4 months. And here we are now. We've been the largest brand in that space. When I say largest, I don't mean by number of employees, but I mean by online reach and engagement and the fans we have and amount of fans and all that stuff. And I'm really proud of that because, like my smart parents, I didn't go to college. You know, I didn't learn how to do this. No one can. I'm the only one that can teach this. I'm the only one that teaches marketing from the hands-on experience of growing a following organically of 1.5 million followers and reaching 100 million people a year for years and years and years. There's no one else that can say that. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that what I teach comes from doing it and it working. You know, how you gonna teach someone how to bake a cake if you've never baked a cake? I mean, sure, there's instructions out there and all, but I think you understand what I mean. I hope the viewers and listeners do too. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm very proud of it, but I'm saying no matter what you do out there, I can help you if you're interested.
And I'm sure you work with podcasts, right, too? You work with anybody. So
I'm definitely interested,
you know.
Okay, cool. Yeah, in my course, my big course, there's actually a podcast section.
Man,
so there you go.
Boom. So anybody can reach out to you, and I definitely will, because I'm not where I need to be, and I just more like to step it up even more, you know. So
yeah, and you know what, James? You know what else I tell people about this stuff? I tell people, because I am definitely not the smartest guy around. Believe me, my wife will tell you that. But the thing is, I am the one, I figured it out, and it's not hard to do. I tell people it's so easy. A drummer can do it. So now that I know how,
if a drummer can do it, anybody can do it.
Find some caveman schlepping something into the cave and he can do it, or she can do it.
Right. Yeah.
So I really enjoy teaching it. And then we have, can I talk about the membership site that we have?
Please. Yes, we mentioned it.
Cool. So we have drumtalktvbrilliance.com, and it's a separate website from Drum Talk TV. You can get there from Drum Talk TV, but Drum Talk TV Brilliance is a membership site. There's two levels. There's the free level and the premium level. The free level is free. The premium level. Yeah, exactly. Took me a while to figure out that one.
Right.
And then the premium level is only $12 a month, or $120 a year. And what you get with it is, with all of it, the paid members get some extra stuff, but we have live online music trivia game shows twice a month where people can win prizes. We do three rounds, and there's a prize package of $50 or more each round. We do that twice a month. And then there's live fan Q&A sessions with big artists, producers, record executives. Then there's live stream concerts where we don't go to a concert with cameras. These are performances put on specifically for our followers. And it could be in the artist's studio. It could be in their living room. It could be before or after a sound check at a venue. I could either show a video or I could send you a video to cut in. Totally up to you. But I have like a 1 minute video that shows what it is. But a lot of fun.
I can definitely do that for you.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And it's, you know, here's the thing. I think if there's one thing no one would argue with me about is that it's a crazy world right now, right? And
definitely.
What we're providing is healthy escapism. Drug and alcohol abuse was up 60% during the COVID pandemic. And even without the pandemic, you know, there's just the political stuff and the economics and all the crazy stuff. We are that healthy escape from that. You want to get off of the drama and the nonsense on name any social platform. Come to the membership site and have some fun. We do monthly drumming challenges where we honor a famous drummer, and people can do something they can't do on Facebook, and that's play to the officially released music by that artist. And then we have a judging curriculum, and first, second, and third place wins $125, $75, $50 prize, respectively, a gift certificate to their favorite music store anywhere in the world. Anyone can join and do this. This month it's Stuart Copeland of The Police. Last month was Vinnie Paul. The month before that was Neil Peart. The month before that was John Bonham. No, was Phil Collins. The month before that was John Bonham. Or Keith Moon. The month before that was John Bonham. Yeah. So, and we've got them lined up already for the rest of the year. So just a lot of fun stuff, and people can win stuff. And, you know, it's a community, and it's just, we spent 3 years developing it before we released it. So that's that.
Well, I think I'm your new best friend because I have so much more to talk to. But I do realize we're running out of time here.
And oh, wow. So,
yeah, it's been an hour already, man. This is
too fast. I thought we were talking for like 15 minutes.
I know. No. No, but I do have two more questions. And then, okay.
Wait, let you go. Purple and 42. Those are the answers.
Got it. <I'm kidding>. Yes, you got them both right, you know. So we do have a Mount Rushmore in USA for those people listening on over the internet. So I want to know from you right now, who are your main Mount Rushmore four musicians of all time? Who is your favorite four?
Of drummers or musicians?
It could be anybody you want to.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be, yeah.
That messes me up. I shouldn't have asked.
I know. Yeah.
I'll say drummers.
Okay,
I'll
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'll say drummers, and I'm going to say, like, not a disclaimer, but a stipulation, that these are my four Mount Drummore drummers.
I love that.
That are ranked as top four because they're such a huge influence to me. It's John Bonham, Phil Collins, Neil Peart, and then it's... I got to settle on one. Carl Palmer.
Okay.
Carl Palmer, Neil Peart, Phil Collins, John Bonham. But right under them is other immense influences who I hope are not watching, or they might be mad. Barrymore, Barlow, Jethro Tull, Ian Paice. Oh, Ian Paice of Deep Purple.
Bill Ward from Black Sabbath.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill Ward for sure. There's just so many, but those four have influenced me personally the most.
Yeah,
my drumming. So that's why I chose those four. But Ian Paice too.
I don't
can we
think,
add a fifth head up there.
Hey man, it's your mountain drum more, so why not, right? Yeah,
so. Okay, so let's go with 20. So it would be
I mean there's so many good musicians out there in the world. It's hard to pick just four, but I'm sure no one will argue with you with your four. Yeah. I mean you got, you know, Pert, Bonham,
Collins. And Carl Palmer.
And
Carl Palmer from Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
You said Phil Collins.
And Collins.
Well, that's five, so that makes sense. Yeah. You know,
and there's a huge amount of other musicians who have really influenced me by their music. And if I could just name a couple real quick or a few, it'd easily Steve Howe of Yes, Alex Lifeson, Geddy Lee, Chris Squire, Rick Wakeman, Keith Emerson, Greg Lake, Ian Anderson, Peter Gabriel. You know, there's a bunch of other musicians and songwriters who are just like so much part of what makes me the musician and the music fan who I am.
Yeah. Okay. One more question, and this is the hardest question I'm asking you today.
Oh, no.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I think.
Okay. All right. So right now, what is, okay, if you could pick one artist, album, or song that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me, your wife, your children, how it makes you feel deep inside your soul.
Tales from Topographic Oceans by Yes, 1973, double album, each side is one song and it's one story. That's my Stuck on an Island song. And when I first heard it, James, I felt like I had been there before. The melodies of some of the music, the vocal lines, it was like kind of freaky. I think I was 11 when I first heard it, maybe 12. And it was like, gosh, where do I know this from? It was like a otherworldly feeling, like I had heard it or been there before. And I still today, I not only listen to it, I play to it. And it's one of the absolute most meaningful albums to me ever. And it's Alan White on drums, Rick Wakeman on keyboard, Steve Howe on guitars, Chris Squire on bass, and John Anderson on lead vocals. And it's just incredible.
Well, that wasn't hard, you know?
I mean, yeah, I didn't know what to expect.
No, because that question is hard for most people, but you knocked that out of the park, you know? And I love you for that, too. Because you knew exactly what to do. So,
thank you.
Okay, so everybody listening, you can visit Dan Schinder at drumtalktv.com. You can sign up for his course
membership site
at drumtalktv.com/brilliance.
It's actually drumtalktvbrilliance.com.
Oh, okay.
Kind of confusing.
Yeah, drumtalktvbrilliance.com.
Right.
So, yeah, we're going to put that in the bottom of the thing. Okay, you can find them on Facebook under Drum Talk TV, Instagram, Drum Talk TV, and YouTube under Drum Talk TV channel. And you can always message them on those sites.
And I think
they'll get back with you. Yeah.
And if people are interested in learning any marketing, even if it's a free workshop, please go to advancedsocialmarketing.com.
Perfect.
AdvancedSocialMarketing.com. And I'd love to meet some of your listeners. Oh, for the membership site, I have a special code to give out for your viewers and listeners.
Nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, they can get, at the premium level, they can get 3 free months by using, I'll put it in the chat as well for you, so you can put it in your notes. But it's all one word, no spaces, DTTV, the number 3, and the word free. At checkout at drumtalktvbrilliance.com. It's DTTV free 3, and you get 3 free months. Come to the game shows, be part of the challenges, or just go check out all the archive challenges. If you like to, if you're not a drummer, but you like people like Neil Peart, John Bonham, you know, stuff like that we've done.
And it's fun.
These drummers have put in.
And it's fun because when I heard you talk about it, you kind of like have like a music bingo, right? Kind of sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so we are. You know what else we have? What's in that? Our membership site, I'll leave everybody with this. We have our top 100 viral videos from our first 10 years. 100 viral videos. You can watch them and see why they went viral because they're just so good.
There you go. Well, I'm definitely going to join today, so this is going to be great for us and you, because I do have a lot more questions for you. I honestly want you to come back anytime.
Wow, thank you. Yeah. I would love to, anytime.
Hopefully I can get your number so we can text back and forth.
I'll see you in half an hour. We'll do it then.
Okay. Yes, sir. So
yeah, let's definitely schedule that again. I would love to, James.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you for everybody else. Thank you for listening. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.
Absolutely.